Hi, thank you very much. My name is Lisa Holton, and as John mentioned, I'm with the Organized Crime and Racketeering Section within the Criminal Division at Department of Justice. Before I get into my piece, I wanted to just briefly mention what we do within Organized Crime and Racketeering Section, because we have sort of a pivotal role within the department related to organized crime. We have three different sections. One is the litigation section. We have a bunch of prosecutors who go out and prosecute organized crime cases around the country, including international organized crime cases. More often than not, they work in tandem with our U.S. attorney's offices, the prosecutors in those offices, but in some cases we take cases that are separately, independently, especially if they span multi-jurisdictional kind of cases. We have a RICO unit. This unit, anytime you hear about a RICO case being brought within this country, it's reviewed and approved by our unit first to make sure that, because it's such a powerful tool. Does everyone know what RICO is? Racketeer Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act. It's the statute by which we prosecute organized crime groups. And because it's such a powerful tool, we review those cases to make sure that there's that the statute's being applied properly and that there aren't any inadvertent abuses. We also have a labor racketeering unit, and these guys, along with the RICO unit, they provide advisory services to people prosecuting labor cases, racketeering cases. One of our main roles is to coordinate the department's organized crime program, and as such, we've been involved in a lot of the efforts underway that Jen's just described in terms of helping do the threat assessment, creating the strategy, and implementing the strategy. And we've also been involved in a lot of the interagency efforts underway, which is what I'm getting ready to describe right now. I wanted to talk about two things today, and some of what I'm going to say, or much of what I'm going to say, might sound redundant to Jennifer's presentation, but just keep in mind that what she's described has been happening within the law enforcement realm, the federal law enforcement realm, and led by the Department of Justice. The piece I'm describing is sort of a parallel process that's occurring within the interagency. When I say interagency, I mean the federal government community. Firstly, Jen described some of the threats that we identified in the law enforcement threat assessment that we conducted a couple years back. After the publication of that strategy, there was a request at a later date by a couple agencies, non-law enforcement agencies, to look at the problem in a more robust way, not just from a law enforcement perspective, but bringing to bear many of the other agencies that had not contributed to the law enforcement strategy. So a request was made to conduct what's known as a National Intelligence Estimate, or an NIE. The NIE, for those of you who aren't familiar with the term, it's done by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Within the Office of Director of National Intelligence is an entity called the National Intelligence Council, and they oversee the production of all NIEs that are done. They do about 12 to 14 a year, and they are typically done at the request of either the president himself or at the request of the National Security Council or agencies that participate within the NSC. So a request was made to do an NIE on international organized crime. And we did that over the course of the last year. In January, it was published. And the findings, not surprisingly, tracked quite a bit with what DOJ and the law enforcement community had found in its threat assessment. There are a couple key points before I get into the five threats that were identified. And I want to mention one, back up a little bit and tell you the NIE is typically a classified document. This document is highly classified. However, the points I'm speaking about are unclassified version of what the main thrust of the NIE has found. So I'm not going to be able to get into as much detail as I would if we were in a classified forum. Couple things. One is that, firstly, there was an NIE that was conducted on international organized crime back in 1995. The threats that were found in this NIE were quite similar to those identified in the 1995 NIE. However, what's more, there's been quite a bit of evolution over time, and basically we've seen the threat morph from what we would classify or describe as a public security threat to that of a national security threat. Why has this happened? A couple key drivers. One is globalization. It's allowed criminals to become more entrepreneurial, more market-focused. They can travel. Another piece of that is technology, the technological innovation that's occurred since 95. If you think about the advent of the internet and how that has allowed criminals to perpetrate all sorts of significant crimes, especially in the financial realm, without ever even leaving their country of origin. And the third prong is the collapse of the former Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union collapsed, I mean, there was already an organized crime, entrenched organized crime to some extent, but this problem really proliferated in all of the Soviet successor states, and there's a level of sophistication that was sort of brought to bear with the Eurasian organized crime groups that has really impacted the state of organized crime as we know it. And so those have been sort of like the key changes that have occurred since 1995 that have allowed organized crime to proliferate to the extent that it has. What we've seen, what a couple kind of major changes in terms of the evolution, what we used to think of as Jen described, the mob or La Cosa Nostra, you know, if you think of anybody who's watched The Sopranos knows that, you know, there's a hierarchical structure to an organized crime group. Those types of groups still exist to this day. We've also seen a decentralization into more loose networks that are non-hierarchical, or sometimes you have more structured organized crime groups collaborating with more networked organizations that are opportunistic. This poses a huge challenge to law enforcement because it's, number one, it's harder to identify the perpetrators, it's harder to target them. You can't just take out a couple of the key players in the organization when they're loosely networked like that and have a significant impact the way you could disrupt a criminal organization if you're attacking the mob and you go after the Godfather or one of the capos or something like that and make a key impact. There's also been a blurring of licit and illicit worlds. And what I mean is organized crime groups have increasingly penetrated the licit economy and just the licit world in general. They are oftentimes, though they may be engaged in a lot of nefarious criminal activities, they're also investing in legitimate investments for the purposes of money laundering, you know, buying real estate, investing in the securities market, investing in strategic sectors. We've seen an increase in investment in things like metals industry and the natural gas industry, other types of mining, just areas where the U.S. would have a major concern about its supplies and access to those types of materials. And in the blurring between, when I talk about blurring of illicit and illicit worlds, there's also been a trend towards organized criminals co-opting what we call legitimizers, basically lawyers, bankers, other types of legitimate players out there. And some of them, you know, sometimes there's a complicity and sometimes it's unwitting. So you have, in some cases, people who are legitimate bankers, they may not realize that they're actually facilitating criminal activity on the part of an organized criminal. In other cases, you have people who are completely witting of the fact that they're doing this, and yet they're maintaining an air of legitimacy by continuing with their legitimate operations. And this has the effect of reputation cleansing. Many of these organized criminals have taken great pains as they've amassed more wealth and more clout to try to cleanse their reputations and their images. They want to appear legitimate even while they're engaged in activities like drug trafficking and other things. And so they're making greater use of these types of people, corrupt politicians and others, to create more, a illicit facade. And in terms of actual key threats that we've identified, and this will sound much like what Jen just spoke about regarding the law enforcement threat assessment that we conducted. One of the top threats was international organized crime penetration of influence on state institutions. And what we mean by this is everything from co-opting state leaders, where we have, in some cases, international organized crime groups that actually have state leaders in their pockets, to maybe states where there's weak governance and weak police powers and things like that, and where organized criminal groups have just been allowed to flourish by virtue of the fact that there hasn't been adequate rule of law in place to prevent their increase. Also, the threat to the global economy is another major threat that we've identified. That's based in part because organized criminal groups continue to amass great financial clout, and they're able to therefore have greater impact on the economy. I already mentioned penetrating financial and commercial markets is a major concern. And one of the other big concerns that we have is that they're increasingly driving out legitimate business. They're making it harder and harder for legitimate business to compete because they're engaged in many underhanded tactics. They may have corrupt public officials in their pockets. They engage in bribery and fraud, violence, and other things that will allow them to gain the upper hand and the legitimate businesses to lose market share. Another concern from the economic standpoint is piracy. I'm not talking about on the high seas, but piracy of intellectual property, meaning, you know, counterfeit products, DVDs, that kind of stuff. There's been, between the increase in piracy of these types of products coupled with corrupt state relationships, whereby, you know, organized crime groups are able to produce stuff and these types of products and pay off officials to look the other way, markets are getting flooded with cheap or counterfeit products, many of which may not even be safe when you get into the pharmaceutical realm and other things. And some of the industries that are most impacted are the pharmaceutical realm, fashion, computing, finance, entertainment, publishing, and all of these are areas where the U.S. is considered to be, that's its economic strength. Another concern with regard to the economic realm is just that, you know, emerging market countries are particularly vulnerable to organized crime penetration, and they're going to increasingly, you know, based on the fact that there's corruption, weak law enforcement oftentimes, and lack of transparency, they're fertile ground for this continuing to evolve. And that we're also concerned about the fact that these coercive and shady business practices employed by international organized criminals will further undermine transparency and confidence in some of the other strategic sectors that we've talked about. Three other threats that were identified in the NIE are the growing cybercrime threat, and you know, cybercrime costs consumers at least billions annually. We're talking about, you know, criminals engaged in phishing schemes, online auction fraud, hacking into computers, all sorts of tactics, but the losses are staggering. Even though they're in some ways rather difficult to quantify, we do know, we have some information that correlates or supports the dollar losses being in the billions. We're concerned about not just the losses to consumers, but also how this undermines confidence in the banking sector, financial markets, and what we call global trust systems, banks, stocks, and credit card services. And also the other aspect of this is, you know, cybercrime in and of itself is sort of a force multiplier in terms of increasing the threat profile of these groups. The fourth threat that we identified was threatening the crime, basically the nexus between crime and terror. We have some criminal groups, or some terrorist groups rather, like FARC, Taliban, and Hezbollah have been engaged in narcotics trafficking to raise funding. But conversely, we also have concerns about criminal groups providing logistical services to terrorist groups, whether it's document fraud or smuggling, those types of things. And the fifth is expansion of drug trafficking, because unlike the DOJ threat assessment, which intentionally neglected to look at the drug trafficking aspect, the NIE did encompass drug trafficking. And the drug trafficking expansion is a great concern from the standpoint of we're seeing groups that were previously not involved in producing drugs forming alliances with drug producers so that they have their entire distribution network. We also see groups expanding their market share, like groups from Colombia and other parts of South America now using West African groups to traffic cocaine. So these are the primary concerns that we were identified in the NIE. And now what we're doing about it is something similar to what we did a couple years back within the law enforcement realm. We're trying to figure out how we're going to shape a responsive strategy. And we're right now in the process of working within the National Security Council with all of our partner agencies to put together a strategy that will address some of these threats. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with the National Security Strategy that just came out May 27th. But we're modeling a little bit after that. We're trying to find something that is basically utilizing the strength, a whole of government kind of response, using the full power of the government to include authorities and powers like Jen mentioned in terms of non-law enforcement options too. The primary strategy objectives are, will be roughly, we're still in early stages of developing it, but we'll be looking to protect Americans from harm. That'll be a key point. Protect the financial sector, fight the corruption that feeds organized crime, conduct international outreach and engage in public diplomacy, and work also with the private sector and private industry. So we're in the pre-deliberative phase right now, and we can't get into kind of the deliberations that are ongoing right now, but we're at very early stages in this process, and we're taking a look at all strategies that have previously been employed, including the strategy that Jen just told you about, and so sort of trying to put all of the possible tools in the toolbox out on the table to figure out what would make the most sense to use for this particular purpose. We're hoping that the strategy, this is a very rough estimate, but we're hoping to roll it out by the end of the year, and expect that it will be cross-cutting in terms of the approach.